Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Wednesday, November 7th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In agricultural news, day two of Senate Farm Bill floor debate was full of political maneuvering. Also, the U.S. Trade Representative says world trade talks still have a faint pulse. I'll have details of these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will be by with a report of a fertilizer substitute for golf courses. Drew Lerner will have the latest on agricultural weather as well. It's all on the Wednesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Wednesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. December wheat, 8.11 and a quarter, down 11. July, 7.02, up 2 and a quarter at the Chicago Board of Trade. December wheat, 7.87 and three quarters, down 9 and a quarter. July, 6.91 and a half, up 5 and a half. December corn, 384 and a quarter, down 1 and a half. March, 401 and a quarter, down 1 and 3 quarters. May, 411 and three quarters, down 1 and a quarter. December, 432 and a half, down 1. November beans, 1023 and three quarters, down 5 and 3 quarters. January, 1038 and a half, down 6. March, 1053, down 6. November, 976 and a half, down 5 and a quarter. Of course, that's next year's variety. December soybean meal, 281.90, down 270. December soybean oil, 43.64, up 2. You know, for the Merck part of the CME group, December live cattle, 94.87 and a half, down 87 and a half. November feeders, 107.75, down 47 and a half. December lean hogs, 51.47 and a half, up 35 points on the day. Joining us now on the telephone to talk about the markets is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Dave.
As crude oil goes, so does the commodities. After making all-time contract highs today, I think the lead option December hit 98.62 on the settlement. We're down 20 cents on the day, and the softer tone in the pits at the Board of Trade as well.
Yeah, there's 3 points here that I want to make. We did talk to a floor trader in the pits in Chicago about 110 on a cellular hookup. And basically, he said that, you know, the crude oil and corn and beans and wheat are also interrelated, that it's scary. Also, another scary feature, you know, General Motors losing over $30 billion. And, you know, in the 1950s, it was a common saying when I was a young kid, as GM goes, so goes the nation. And there was also another saying was that GM was one of the greatest industrial companies in the world. And, you know, as the GM goes, so goes the nation. And, of course, the idea here is that the credit system, the dollar, the Chinese government officials, so that, you know, we're actually considering exiting the dollar holdings into other commodity and other currencies, was, in effect, a disarming tool that created havoc in overnight trade, particularly in the dollar, and strengthened the crude oil, and also gold and silver. The Congress was busy entertaining with a reception and with the French president, the new French president, and, you know, with crude oil soaring to new highs, no action done on any kind of legislation on energy. It's all very scary. of the, you know, the general condition of the economic situation in the United States today. And the stock market's down over 245 points as we're talking. So it's down 206 right now. But it is a, you know, a disarming deal, and we did see profit taking in corn, soybeans, and wheat. Crude oil also rolled down when the stocks of crude oil were a little better.
In fact, the Dow making new lows, I believe, since about August of 2007, and I suppose that is going to send up a flag throughout the rest of the week.
Yes, and of course we do have this important crop production report on Friday. We are seeing some, you know, in the central Illinois, we had a bin buster crop, and of course we have bin buster prices here. And we did see some cash movement as far as corn and soybeans into the marketplace. Growing conditions seem to be pretty good around the world. We know we have tremendous acreage of soft wheat and wheat planted here in the U.S. and a good crop of wheat coming along in Argentina. Planting is going full speed in South America. The other factor here that we have to focus on is you know, the customer's major question is when is corn, soybeans, and wheat going to decouple?
Mm-hmm.
When are we going from inflation to deflation and a slowdown in the economy? And these are all very interesting concepts that are on everybody's mind, but the market is basically sorting this out on an hourly and daily basis until we get more information.
So when you were on that cellular phone up at the Board of Trade with the traders, did you ask about that decoupling question?
Well, I asked him what the how the corn was going to close today, and the question was the oil's too weak for corn to change anything but lower. And, you know, they also wanted to talk about, I asked what the how corn was going to close by the end of the week, and he said million-dollar question, and his general feeling was that longer term he was somewhat friendly corn based on a smaller U.S. production.
Will USDA do some things on the demand side, though, that might negate any loss in yield?
My impression is yes, and I think it's going to be a three-strike deal of feeding. We know the hog producer's losing money. We know that the chicken producer's losing money. So I think we will see some weakening of demand in feeding. And also the industrial use of the ethanol, I think it'll be cut some, maybe 100 to 200 million bushels. And also the exports won't quite be as robust as what the government is talking about, mainly two reasons: the price of grain and the cost of transportation. The other factor is the world is concentrating a great deal on expansion of production, and we do think that those numbers are going to be quite large in the months to come.
Why did the deferred wheat contracts show strength in an otherwise lackluster market?
Well, a couple of things. We are under the impression that people are rolling spreads, getting out of the nearby December and buying the deferred. That's A factor. And B, whenever a bearish situation comes in, people bear spread, sell the nearby and buy the deferred. And I think that's one of the factors that we're seeing in the July wheat, for example. Even though the price relationship might even be more bearish than the nearby situation, because of the liquidity and the very large spreading volumes by the funds supersedes any fundamentals at this time. But the only thing we can say is that whenever there's distortions like that in the market, it is marketing opportunities for someone.
We ought to turn our attention to the soybeans as it relates to Friday's report. Will USDA do very much with yield here?
Yeah. A couple things. Of course, you know, crude oil and soybean oil and shipping soybean oil out of the U.S. To Europe is a big factor in keeping the bean market strong. The general impression is that the bean crop is going to be larger by the two premier firms, Informa and also F.C. Stone, as far as their guest estimates are concerned. Our general impression is that we do think there's a lot of beans going to be planted in South America. if the growing conditions deteriorate, then that's a price explosion on the upside. We do think two things in the soybeans. You know, after the crop production report, then the war starts on acreage. The general impression that we get is that the central Illinois farmer is going to cut back a little bit from corn, but it's still going to be it's still, as far as our numbers are concerned, more profitable to raise corn than soybeans. I think some of the demand is going to take place in maybe robbing bean acres, taking acres away from cotton and pasture in the south and planting more soybeans. So we are going to see a real effort here to still maximize production, and all the wheat acres that were planted this winter probably try to be double cropped in soybeans later this summer.
So what is the number the traders are working with as their working number for what they think their action on the floor has done in terms of corn acres?
You know, I think the general feeling right now is somewhere in this 4 to 6 million acre reduction. The most popular number that we see right now is in that 86 to 87 million acres for corn production. And, it'll be a little smaller than that, Dave. I tell you what, I don't have that number handy right this second.
All right, that's fine, Paul. Lots of good stuff, though, this afternoon. Thanks for speaking with us.
Have a profitable day.
You too. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's Tuesday forecast tonight, he says, in the north and central sections, mostly cloudy. In the south, partly cloudy, lows ranging from 28 in eastern Indiana to 33 in west central Illinois. Tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sunshine with highs ranging from 48 in northeastern Indiana to 58 in southwestern Illinois. Wind speeds tomorrow, 10 to 20 miles per hour. Minimum afternoon relative humidity ranging between 35 and 45%. Extended highlights, generally dry and open weather, will continue through Saturday. Scattered showers will be possible on Sunday, primarily in northern into central locations. In agricultural news, Senator Pete Domenici yesterday announced his intention to attach a new 36 billion gallon renewable fuels standard to the farm bill. But Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is opposed, saying that no amendment that isn't germane to the farm bill should be attached to the farm bill. Political maneuvering yesterday highlighted day two of Senate Farm Bill floor debate. Reid says he wants to limit amendments in order to finish the farm bill before lawmakers leave Washington November 16th for a two-week Thanksgiving break.
But it will not be improved by non-relevant amendments. I've mentioned some of the suspects that are lurking out there. Tax provisions dealing with repealing the estate tax, getting us out of Iraq immediately.
Senators also spent part of yesterday firing back at White House pronouncements that the farm bill is fiscally irresponsible. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says he's disappointed the administration is threatening a veto before the bill is even finalized. And Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says Congress can't be looking over its shoulder at the White House.
I think what we have to do right now is not worry about the president's veto. I think we got to find out what we can do to get a bill to the president. And maybe when we get to conference, it'll be a little more precise what the president has to have in order to sign a bill. I believe deep down in his heart the president wants to sign a farm bill.
Yesterday, Grassley introduced an amendment that would place an annual farm cap on farm couples of $250,000. Grassley says if the measure passes, two senators, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas and Saxby Chambliss of Georgia, might choose to delay the entire farm bill.
Senator Dorgan and I have said that if we lost, we would not hold up a farm bill. So would they put in jeopardy for 2.5 million farmers, a farm program, because some large farmers in cotton and rice country aren't getting exactly what they want? My answer is I don't think that they'd have guts enough to hold it up. But can I be absolutely certain of that? No.
California Senator Dianne Feinstein yesterday announced she would not pair the Ag Jobs Bill with the Farm Bill. The White House Office of Management and Budget objected to increases in crop, dairy, and sugar programs, a new weather-related disaster aid package, and the expansion of a fruit and vegetable school snack program. And all OMB suggests the Senate Farm Bill contains $37 billion of tax increases and, quote, budget gimmicks. National Farmer Union President Tom Bias says the numbers are misleading.
They're trying to make a big issue about the funding sources and whether or not this farm bill is adequately paid for under the rules of the federal budget law. And it is. And I know the Budget Committee Chairman, Senator Conrad, strongly disagrees with the administration's assessment of the budget provisions in here, so that's a big issue.
Meanwhile, last night, the House overrode President Bush's veto of the Water Resources Development Act by a 361-54 vote. Southern Illinois Democrat Jerry Costello.
In this WERDA bill, we are authorizing the Upper Mississippi and Illinois waterway system. The bill authorizes the replacement of 600-foot navigation locks with 7 new 1,200-foot locks to bring more efficiency and effectiveness to our water transportation system. Our current system loses about 10% of its capacity due to the system failure and breakdowns because it's exceeded its life expectancy by over 20 years.
All 54 votes against the bill were cast by Republicans. A Senate vote to override could come later this week. U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab says that the U.S. continues to press for a Doha Round world trade deal, even though many lawmakers and analysts say the deal is dead.
We are in a very, very tricky, at a very tricky point in the history of the negotiation of the Doha Round. I was very optimistic starting in August when the AIPAC leaders got together and pledged to encourage their counterparts, colleagues, to negotiate within the context of the ag and industrial texts in the Doha Round. And then you started seeing a number of countries saying, oh, yeah, well, that's okay for the United States, and that's okay for the EU, and that's okay for others, but we want more and we want to do less.
Schwab says in the next few weeks, there's a real threat that individual countries and small blocks of countries will block progress in the Doha Round. Rumors are flying at the Chicago Board of Trade that foreign companies will cancel U.S. wheat purchases made earlier this year. After hitting a high of 961.75 on September 28th, benchmark December wheat closed Monday at 785. In the same period of time, the U.S. dollar has lost more than a dollar of value. Cancellations and buybacks in September and October were higher this year than a year ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Some communities have requested golf courses utilize natural fertilizers in order to minimize the possibility of a downstream threat to surface and groundwater. Todd Gleason has more on a replacement fertilizer that could help the links go green.
Most nitrogen fertilizers use natural gas as the primary input to create the plant food. To develop a more natural fertilizer with a higher nitrogen content, University of Illinois researchers worked with Archer Daniels Midland Company, ADM, to test a series of natural-derived fertilizer products. The result of the testing is a line of products marketed under the name NatureStem. They contain lysine. It is a byproduct from fermented corn. One advantage of these lysine-based products, says U of I researcher Tom Firmanen, is that they dissolve quickly in water and can be mixed with other turf products that are normally applied as a spray. Lysine, in its granular form, is 15% nitrogen and soluble in water, so it's quickly available to turf for use, similar to most synthetic fertilizers. The result of the U of I study shows that three lysine-based formulations tested were generally rated equal in quality to ammonium sulfate. In a previous evaluation, they were tested against urea, and the lysine formulations were also similar in response. All of the plots, says Firmanen, that received fertilizer materials generally had better quality than the unfertilized controls, and the three new formulated NatureStem fertilizers made from lysine were rated as well as the ammonium sulfate and sustain controls applied at the same rate. So, the U of I research shows NatureStem products perform as well as synthetic fertilizers, but have the added benefit of providing golf course managers with a more natural alternative to traditional fertilizers. ADM intends to have NatureStem available for residential use as well as commercial applications. Firmanen said that long-term studies are needed to observe any additional positive effects the routine use of lysine as fertilizer might have. Funding for the study was provided in part by ADM. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now for our look at the futures market, no, make that our look at the cash grain market, is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon, Kay.
Well, good afternoon to you, Dave.
Are you getting phone calls, receiving new bookings on this week's mini rally?
Oh, absolutely. Friday was a very busy day buying grain, and not too much Monday, but yesterday we bought a lot, today we bought a lot. Yeah, the farmers are very busy stepping into this market, and I'm glad that they are.
Is hedge pressure essentially over at this point?
Well, in most places, I think harvest is over with. We're at the tail end, there's no doubt. But believe it or not, we had lines down the street this morning, so there's enough out there that we're still busy here at the elevator, and there's still a lot of beans out there. When we got ready to start corn harvest, the beans were still a little green, and so we've still got some double crop and some first crop. So we're just at the tail end, David. It's finally winding down a little bit.
For those producers who have gone ahead and put their crops in the bins, corn and beans, what are the prices they're talking about to unlock those doors?
They should be doing it, I think. You know, of course, here again, there could be some surprises in the report Friday. You know, there was a mixed bag out there among analysts as to whether the government would lower production in corn or raise it. Now then, they seem to all be over on the side that they think the government's going to lower production. There could be some surprises in there, but depending on what crude oil does is what the grains are going to do. These are awfully good prices, and for the grain they've got in their bins, I think they ought to be, at least 40 or 50% sold, and then if they want to gamble with some, then that's kind of up to them. But these are awfully good prices, Dave.
Where is basis going to go in your neck of the woods over the next 30 days?
Basis is it continued to improve all along. It slipped back a little bit. Anytime you see the markets go up like this on the Chicago Board of Trade, you're going to see basis slip a little bit. But these farmers are going to lock this stuff away. I think the basis levels will stay pretty constant until January. Then once it starts hitting the elevators, then you'll probably see it back off a little bit.
And what about your prices then today?
All right, our cash corn today is $3.64. Beans are $9.85. New crop wheat is $6.07.
Thank you very much, Kay.
Thank you, Dave.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. And in about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Former Illinois Governor George Ryan avoided a throng of reporters today by entering the Oxford Federal Prison in Wisconsin through the back door to begin serving his prison sentence. Oxford spokeswoman Christine Montona says because Ryan's a high-profile prisoner, he entered through the back gate for security reasons. The 73-year-old Republican will serve 6.5 years at the rural prison. Ryan was convicted in 2006 of steering contracts, tax fraud, misuse of tax dollars and state workers, and stopping a bribery investigation. He and Laura Lynn Ryan, his wife of more than 50 years, left their home in Kankakee before daybreak today to make the 250-mile drive to Oxford. Ryan has maintained his innocence and says he goes to prison with a clear conscience. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin plans to meet this afternoon with the man President Bush has picked to head the Veterans Affairs Department. And one topic of conversation is sure to be problems at the VA hospital in Marion, Illinois. Durbin says he'll meet with Lieutenant General James Peake in the senator's Capitol Hill office. Urbana school board members will consider a list of projects to improve several school buildings over the next 6 years. Facilities Director Oda Dossett says they include mainly cosmetic upgrades like classroom air conditioning and removing asbestos flooring from the schools and not major renovations. Some say at least a major renovation is necessary, though, at one older building, Washington Early Childhood. A coalition of media and citizens groups has formed a new nonpartisan debate group that hopes to host at least 3 debates in next year's Indiana governor's race. So far, 12 groups have signed on to the Indiana Debate Commission. One member says the goal is to prevent some of the issues that reduced the number of debates in the past. A stretch of Country Fair Drive now carries the honorary designation of Keith Page Drive. The street runs past the WICD studios in West Champaign, where Page was a longtime weatherman until his death nearly a year ago. The city unveiled the new street signs today as friends and family members watched. Page was well known in the community as a magician as well as a weatherman. He also hosted kids' shows in the 1960s, including one on WILL-TV. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the senior agricultural meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
What a difference about a month makes. Conditions down in Brazil look like they're pretty much ideal for an early maturation of soybeans.
Well, it certainly looks good right now for some of the crop development down there and for the planting that's still going on. It still looks like there are some problem areas in a few spots, but most of the country, like you said, has come around full circle here, and we are now looking at much improved conditions. The problem areas in Brazil are mostly in the northeast, in a couple of states called Bahia and also northern Minas Gerais. These areas have been dry for an extended period of time, will stay that way, but they do not represent a very high percentage of the crop. And most areas have seen quite a bit of rainfall in the past couple of weeks. There's actually a few areas in the center-south production area that may be getting a little bit too wet, but I don't think that's going to be much of an issue. I think we're going to continue to see showers and thunderstorms occur routinely across most of Brazil. And the bottom line is that field work will advance around the precipitation. It's interesting to note that Mato Grosso, the nation's number one soybean-producing state, has not only got caught up on its planting here in the last couple of weeks, but it's actually ahead of schedule now. I think 54% versus 42% is the progress rate there, and that's a big improvement from being behind the eight ball by almost 20 percentage points at one point earlier last month. So looks good there. Argentina's also looking pretty good right now. There are a few more areas in Argentina that are on the dry side, and we'll watch them real closely as we go through the next couple of weeks. But I don't think that we have any real serious problem in Argentina at the moment. One other comment to be made about South America, though, with La Nina being with us now, there will be a bias for eastern Argentina, Uruguay, southern Paraguay, and southern Brazil to turn drier than usual in the latter days of November and on through much of December, if this La Nina is a traditional one.
Turn our attention to wheat-growing areas here in the U.S., and boy, the hard red winter wheat area could use a drink.
Yeah, it's getting pretty dry out there. Most of the High Plains region hasn't seen any rain in the last 2 weeks, and there are a number of areas out there that have gone 30 days or more with less than a half inch of moisture. The driest areas right now are in the Oklahoma Panhandle and a few counties on either side there in northern parts of the Texas Panhandle and in southwest Kansas. Some of those areas, like I said, have been pretty darn dry for probably a good 5 weeks. And the situation there is not as alarming as you might imagine. They do a considerable amount of irrigation across that region, and water supply was improved with all the wet weather earlier this year. But with La Nina still dominating world weather, hard red wheat country is not likely to come through the winter with an abundance of precipitation. In fact, it should be below average moisture from now into early spring. So some of these drier areas may not be a big issue today, but they could be an issue when we get to the spring season.
And areas you're keeping an eye on globally.
Well, we're still watching Australia try to recover from its drought. Obviously, the winter wheat crop is pretty much a done deal now. They did lose a tremendous amount of crop again this year. The harvest is about 10 to 15% complete there. They've got a ways to go. It is raining in eastern portions of Australia now on a regular basis, and that has some traders and producers concerned that we're going to see some delays in the harvest and maybe hurt some of the quality there. But it has been such a severe drought for such a long period of time that I think a lot of producers are willing to give up some of their crop if they can just get the water supply replenished. Sorghum and cotton usually go in the ground at this time of the year, and there's just no moisture around for the irrigated crop to go into the ground. Outside of that, I think we're doing pretty good, though, across Europe. India, the former Soviet Union, most of India is doing very well also. So I think those are pretty much the issues today.
Thank you much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner, Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our first look at the markets. This is Dave Dickey.